Tom Jenkins. Okay, Tom, where you go? You with your question. Thank you.
Hiya, good evening, everybody. The Black Lives Matter movement operates without a hierarchy and without a leader. I think there's two things that we might be able to discuss to do with that. Firstly, it seems to have confused people a little bit. The normal response seems to be for people to look for a leader that they can get a soundbite from or, you know, can quote in some way. And secondly, is there anything maybe we could learn from their chapter system that they have? It does seem on face value to be a little bit like the Rotary Club, but clearly a lot of their moves so far have been, some would describe as dynamic. So does anyone think there's anything we could learn in that respect from them?
Well, I've read the website, yes. I don't know too much detail about how they organize. I know what I said before is that they seem to be a non-hierarchical. I really can't think it's chapters. I don't know. They're like, supposed to like equivalent of branches, or a sort of American term. But the main thing about them, so Ames is really, which is not, it's not unworthy in a sense. Ames is to get reforms for black people, you know, to end police brutality against black people, but also get, I think also to go get legislation, economic reforms as well to, in favor of black people, but it's not unworthy, but from what I see, they don't have a class perspective. To be honest, I don't know too much about how they organize. That's what I read from the website, really. But I don't know if anybody else has got anything to add to that, really.
Anybody else would like to come back on that? What Tom is commenting on the lack of a hierarchy and also the structure. Anybody else? No? Okay. On the list is Dougie. Dougie.
Hi, Oliver. Did you look into how many people, black people, end up in prison in America? You know, I mean, I remember reading a book by Bill Bryson, and I think it was about the late 80s, 90s, and he was touring America, and he was basically saying black people have more chance of getting shot in America than they had in the Second World War. And there's a disproportionate number of them end up in prison because of the laws in America about drugs and different things. Did you look into that at all, Oliver?
I know they're disproportionately, people, I said, didn't have time. I did get the figures, but I know you're disproportionately a lot of prisoners in America. I know there's more black young men in prison than are in universities and colleges in America. I know that. So that's one statistic, but I don't know the exact statistics. But I know they're more likely to go to prison than white people for same level crimes. That's another fact as well. They tend to get longer sentences than white working class people. I was going to mention, I forgot to put it in my talk actually, but I did read out about it. You know, it's part of a preparation talk, and I forgot to put it in really, but there's so much stuff there. But I forgot to mention that, yeah, disproportionately, and it's not just in the US, but here as well. It was, I did have figures before, but it's something like, I can't remember, it's 15% in the UK prisons are black, but only about 3-4% of the population, something like that. But it's the same, similar situation here that black and African tend to send to prison for the same crimes than white people are, and tend to have longer sentences. But probably find the same in France and Germany and other countries and in Canada. But yeah, I wouldn't read about it. Should include that in my talk.
Okay, Carla.
Hi. Oliver, you mentioned slavery, and how it all started, because basically it's, you know, it's so systemic in America, racism. And as you say, it started with the slaves. But of course, once the slaves were freed, there was a lack of laborers and manpower. So they immediately used the 13th Amendment. The 13th Amendment abolished slavery and involuntary servitude, except when applied as punishment for a crime. So what happened was, because they obviously were free and didn't have a job at the moment, you know, they weren't someone's slave, they were starting to be arrested for things like really petty crimes, like vagrancy. So then they were put into jail. Of course, once they're in jail, they're then used as slave labor again. So basically, they were slaves, and now they went back to being a slave because they used the 13th Amendment. And basically what's been happening since is that it started with this picking on the slaves. And it's now, I mean, the prison system in America is a business. It is a big, huge business. And it is mainly the main workers there, of course, are Black and Hispanic. And they use them as slave labor. So basically, we still have slaves. And, you know, so I understand that the whole Black Lives Matter thing, it's, this goes back maybe 200 years.
Yeah, I agree with that. I didn't go back to the slavery bit, but yeah, you're right. Slavery really led to things like the Jim Crow laws and segregation later on. That's, go back a few years ago, we this ex-member set up this website called Socialist Debate, and he was sort of contact different groups, where he's spamming them really, and he said contacted an African American separatist group and talked about slavery, and one of them replied that, Comrades, I was quite interested. He said that free slaves formed communities in America, quite prosperous communities where they had skills and they were able to, so like skilled workers who produced for themselves, but the American state sort of broke them up, violently broke them up, these communities, and forced them into become like wage workers in the cities, in the northern cities. Taking the lowest paid jobs in the factories and so forth. I think if I remember that's what he mentioned. So, of course, ideologically and culturally, slavery left its mark through the basic issues, through the rise of white supremacist groups and like Ku Klux Klan and everything else. But slavery itself is sort of presaged the factory system. It was very much, where a lot of slaves got together and are producing for market, it was very sort of had to produce quickly, and there was sort of very rough discipline to make sure they got the products to market because they're very cruel as well. But the slave owners and the slaves they used to did try to find a family life for the slaves. You know, get to at least have a family life where they can get married, have children, and so forth. But the cruelty was that they. Because of the market, the slaves had an advantage to sell off either the children or the husband or the wife for a good price. So they used to break up these families. It's very sort of tragic. You know, they'll break up these families because one of the members of the family, somebody made a good offer, them a good price, but they make a profit selling them off. So break up the family, call it a lot of heartache. But that's one of the sort of cruelties of the system. But
Any more questions? That's pretty sparse on the question side. Right. You can see Alan and Janet have got a question. Okay, Alan and Janet.
Yeah, okay. It's Janet here. It's really very difficult to know where to start. But my feeling is, shouldn't we be talking about, of course we need to know the history. And I hope we all know a lot of the history. But shouldn't we be talking about now and the consequences for people? I read recently a book by an English woman, actually. And what did she call it? It was Why I have stopped talking to white people about race. Yeah? And she really got to grips with it.
Nailed it.
She really does nail it. Because it's you see, what have we got on here tonight? Are we all white? I'm guessing that we're all white.
No.
I don't know. Oh, am I wrong?
Yes, you are.
Wrong, okay. Percentage-wise? Okay, so my point is that how well are we able to put ourselves in the position of black folk? Really, like, whether there are so many ways they are legislated literally, but that, like, for instance, people applying for jobs is I read something just a couple of days ago. It could be their name or who knows what, but it when it comes down to it, people with the same qualifications, when it comes to getting the job, chances of the black person getting it, if there's a white person applying for it, is very limited. And I'm talking about the UK. That was research on the UK. But certainly in it, and the UK is pretty bad with it too. Might not be quite on the level of the UK, but it's the same thing with UK is perhaps slightly better than the US. But the problems that the black folk in the UK have, the police. Percentage of black folk in the UK, what is it, 5% or so? Maybe not quite that, but I'm not really quite sure. But the chances of them having problems with the police for things that the white folk won't even be stopped for or just go on your way. Just thinking, we've somehow, as a white majority, which I feel we are, we've got to somehow get into the meat of this thing. Yes, understanding history is important, very, very important. But really, it's a day-to-day thing, an absolutely horrific thing, anybody's term, surely. And I just sort of wish we could get to grasping that aspect of it rather than spending too much time looking at history, which we can all read about. I'm sure lots of us have read lots of the history. But it's somehow getting a perspective on now and what these folk are trying to do, mostly in the States, but not just in the States, and where they are being taken over now by these fucking big corporations, which is limiting what they can do, ultimately. That's all I'll say for the minute.
Oh, yes. Do you agree, Robert? I was very comfortable taking this talk. I realized as a white male, I may not be qualified to do it, but I tried my best in the talk. I did mention how the system, maybe I did, black people in the UK and US face systemic discrimination in their housing and job markets. How they suffer more from COVID. I had it in my notes, actually. I was mentioned that more black people stopped and searched by the police, but somehow I overlooked it. So it's the reason I mentioned the historical bit at the end about slavery is to understand, it's not just having a history lesson, it's to understand how we get the racist structures of capitalism, where did it come from? That oppressed black working class people today. Yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, black people, black working class, have experiences white people suffer from. I was trying to relay that, but maybe I didn't do it adequately. But it's my my inadequacy as a speaker, I'm afraid. But I also didn't get that through. But the idea was mentioning slavery again was to how viewed capitalism's racist structure, which still we live with today, go some way to explain why black people face problems that they do as they do today. Not the only reason, but the main reason. A large reason. So yeah, I agree with that. We talk about here and now. You're quite right. Because that's funny, when I try to, like, when I talk about white privilege, that if you're white, you don't have to fear the police when you go outside. That's part of the aspect. It's true, if you and I go down, we're not going to stop by the police. Otherwise, the policeman's going to put a gun to our head and shoot us or anything like that. We're less likely to anyway, but
again.
So, how do we as socialists support our fellow black workers?
How do we support practically? Socialists. Well,
what if anything can we and are we doing about it? And in what ways can we support our fellow workers, apart from trying to convince them of the case for socialism? Anyone else?
I remember a trade union supporting black workers there. So be more sympathetic. We can't, as you're aware, we can't really join or actively support black lives. We can sympathize with them, sympathize what they're trying to do, but we can't actively support them. A socialist organization, we can't do that. Hard question to answer, really. Well, in our day-to-day lives, I suppose see black people picked on the street, I suppose as a human being, and you just support them physically as human beings, I suppose we. But support them through trade unions or tenant associations or whatever, but I don't know if anybody else has got anything to add to that, anything else to offer up, but
anybody else would like to come back on that? All I was saying, I don't think it was politically, particularly directed at Oliver. It was directed at the membership or at socialists anyway.
Quite right. Yes, it wasn't directed at Oliver yet.
See, nobody's coming back. That question, how do we approach the black working class? Socialists, well, we approach them as the black working class and the white working class together as members of the working class. The same situation confronts both, whether you're white or black or whatever color, you know, and whatever nationality you are. Approach of fellow working class is exactly the same. Members of the working class, and they confronted the same problems, issues. Okay, it's on to Paddy now. Paddy?
Hi, yeah. I want to ask a question, basically a really simple question. Is race a class issue or not?
Well, it's an artificial construct in a way. Historical construct as well, part of the same human race, really. I say it is. I mean, it's a construct of history, isn't it? I try to show in my talk that I don't think under feudalism, race or different, what I call it, different ethnicities were really an issue among human race. It only became an issue with capitalism. As to colonialism and slavery, I think it's brought to the fore. In a sense, it is, because the African slaves were self a subjected class. They were they're a class themselves, so they, the culture, the fight back was on class lines, so the fight back against the rebellions against the state, or sorry, we could say a class action. So issues very specific are intertwined with class, because even if coming up against the police is a class issue. I mean, I forgot to mention my talk I hadn't written down here. It's the role of the police in society. Police, as we know, is here to sort of preserve capitalist social relations, produce capitalist order, make sure that workers and slaves, the workers behave themselves and produce the profits. So they're really here. The police exist, control the working class, and the black workers themselves are at a sort of front end of the poorest end of the working class here in America. Well, I thought complicated. The police, who are representatives of the state, so I'm not explaining it very well, but it's interesting, the police in America, a lot of police force in America actually evolved from what they called slave patrols back in the 18th, 19th century, where organized bands of men sort of whose job was to capture escaped slaves and give them back to slave owners, send them back to slave owners, so they're so you find actually the origins of a lot of the American police force parts to these slave patrols. So there's that racial aspect in America. So the issues have the sort of issues that were thrown up by the Black Lives Matter are they working class issues. Police brutality, discrimination, the job and housing markets, these are issues class issues. So
Can I come back on that? Cause,
yeah, sure. Yeah.
What you seem to be saying is it's not a class issue. And I think that's probably central to why we don't really know what to say about this, because we're a working class organization. Our job is to represent class interests. And if we're taking the view that racism isn't a class, issue, That's why we've neutralized ourselves on it. But I actually heard.
I said it was a race issue. I mean, it was a class issue. Racism is.
Oh, you did. You did say it was. Oh, I was going to say, yeah, because some members the other day.
I said it was. It's issues brought up by these protests are class issues. At the end of the day, I thought I said that. Yeah, racism. But I try to explain that racism evolved as a way of. Well, first of all, keep slaves in their place. Also, colonial subjects, the colonial working class, they're all part of the working class.
Can I explain?
It doesn't affect white workers as such. It's still a class issue.
Okay.
Involves in capitalism. Well, that's not the way I look at it anyway.
Can I just explain why I asked? Because I've heard the argument put before that things like this are cross-cutting issues. In other words, because you've got black people amongst the ruling class, then it's a cross-cutting issue. You know, it's not completely confined to the working class. However, I've also heard other members say the complete opposite, which is that, of course, racism doesn't affect black billionaires. So, of course, common sense tells you that it is a class issue. And I've heard both arguments put by party members. So I was just asking for a bit of clarification.
No, I'm not. That's been well. Actually, I mean, well, I suppose you could say that discrimination could affect black capitalists. For example, if you're a black billionaire driving a Rolls Royce through a city, you might get stopped by the police because they think either you're a drug dealer or you stole a Rolls Royce. There is a rich people actually do sometimes complain about that type of police harassment, so it could affect black capitalists. But I think the most, but I think I would argue that probably relatively rare. But once, well, you find once the police realize they're dealing with something that the upper class, the attitude changes, become a lot more respectful. Change. I remember years ago, I was working doing a bar job at Alexander Palace, and at a Indian, a very lavish Indian wedding. And it's funny, a lot bar staff out there, they were like, they had a stereotype. They did people that were all shopkeepers. It was they also worked hard to build a lavish. They were actually from the sort of Indian upper class. Well, they found out that, they said, they were sort of, oh God, she said, you know, she's a princess or something. Oh, God almighty, sir. They're so really chuffy, you know, really honored to be among all these sort of wealth Indians. They weren't like your usual. They didn't call them the P word or anything else. They were like, ooh, you know, there's somebody, you know. So I say, okay, but sometimes black capitalists, black middle class may be suffer discrimination, but the bulk, most of it, it's not working class people, really, black working class people. Certainly, certainly job issue, unemployment, it's not, obviously not a black capitalist issue. That's imprisonment. That's obviously an issue for a class issue as well. Imprisonment that only affects mainly the black working class. That's, hope that answered your question or.
Yeah, thank you.
Next is Steve Finch.
Good evening, comrades. I think it's. I disagree with what Brian said before that black people experience, black workers experience capitalism in the same way as white workers. I don't think that's the case. I don't think I'm not likely to get stopped and searched for with the same regularity as a black fellow might. So I think we've got to be a bit careful. But I wonder how much we can say about this really, about this issue. Apart from, I think we need to have this attitude or put forward the idea that first of all, we recognise that some of the capitalist class might gain benefit from the fact of working class races. I'm looking at it from a white working class point of view. There is a certain amount of benefit for some capitalists to have this racist working class but. Also, that this is an historical thing as well, and that there are certain sections of the capitalist class that reject this because now they're looking at they need to have set of workers. They want to be able to exploit them to the same degree, and they want these people to be able to work together without any sort of racism within their organisations. You know, and whilst I appreciate all this research that goes into that's gone on about discrimination against people's names, for example, when they're applying for jobs. Yeah, I know that, but there are. I think we should realise that there are. Divisions within the capitalist class in this respect. And then the other thing is that as a socialist party, I don't think that we can have an answer for everything. We can only put forward the socialist argument. I mentioned this thing before in the meeting that Darren O'Neill ran, asked about this organisation called Football Lads and Lasses Against Fascism. And basically, this these left-wing organizations that are supported, this is prior to this Black Lives Matter kicked off, they don't have any answers. They say we're in favor of working class unity, and we're in favor of basically we're in favor of a nicer kind of capitalism, but they don't have a class based analysis of our issues. So I think the only thing that we can do in this situation is say, look, this is a direct result of a capitalist society, and we have to keep struggling for what we see as the real solution to these problems. I don't think that we can't always be saying, well, we've got a solution for this as a socialist party. No, I'm afraid.
I agree with you that we have a solution for everybody, but because the working class probably need to sort of at least empathetic and sympathetic to all sections of working class, including black workers, we're going to try and make an effort to understand where they're coming from, where the problems are. And you're right, in the sense that we're a social party, we can only put the case of social, but at the same time, we got to be sympathetic and empathetic, as I said, to black workers. We've got to try our best to address their problems, how we address their problems, show how it's related to capitalism, as it were.
Right. Our next ones is Alan Janet.
Yeah, it's Alan here. Good evening, each. Just going back to Paddy's comment question about whether racism is a class issue. I would suggest that it depends where you are in the heap. If you're near the top of the heap, the Obamas or the head of the Department of Justice in the United States, or the or Priti Patel, or the head of the or whatever he's called, whoever the current Chancellor of the Exchequer is in the UK, I can't remember his name, and it isn't an issue. But if you're at the bottom of the heap, is a very serious issue. You know, you're going to be discriminated against severely. That's just my view on that, and I leave it open.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yes, which workers are going to get the worst of it.
Vendor, you're next.
I suppose commenting and replying to Paddy, I think racism, class issue, not a class issue. I think racism is a tool that can be used by the ruling class. Really, you know, there are times when, you know, it's beneficial for them to, be seen to be anti-racist. It's like, you know, there's the black pound, you know, the pink pound, yeah, the women's pound. From a point of view of like the working class, it is an issue in that, you know, like if you're a black woman, you're five times more likely to die in childbirth in Britain, you know. It's not that there's legislation, indeed, there's legislation against racism, but it's something rather incipient that we need to fight against. But, you know, I have sort of like worked for organizations where, you know, like anti-racism is a selling point. You know, they say if we have a more diverse workforce, we're a better, you know, we're a more successful, yeah, bourgeoisie. Stop. Over.
Right. Finished, Evan? Is that you?
Yeah, sorry, that's me, Don.
Next in line then is Dan Mullen. Hey, Dan.
Hi, can you hear me?
Oh, yes.
Hey, come through.
Okay. Yeah, yes. Okay. I was making had some a few thoughts come through. Good evening to you, and good afternoon to me. I think as far as dividing working class against each other, I want to make an observation about in Ireland, everybody was white, but it became a Protestant versus Catholics issue. Then there was a situation in Rwanda where everybody was black, but it became a tribe issue. The Tutsis and the, I forget the other name. And in America, it seems to be multi-layered, where it can be liberals versus conservatives. Conservatives rant about how they hate California. You know, it could be the state of California. They hate California, as well as racism, black and white people. So somehow capitalism manages to divide us against each other in some way. Just an observation I wanted to make.
Yes, it is for capitalism divides work class in very many different ways. I agree with that.
Noticed, Howard. Howard Moss is just does that end on the question? Howard, all you was. Howard. Seems to have left his mic.
Sorry, I didn't unmute myself. I've got it now. Hear me?
Yes, sir.
You're fine.
Okay. I started to say, when I was first in the party and there was apartheid in South Africa, I remember a conversation about this with, but he was a long-standing member, and who said, capitalism is colorblind, and the situation you've got in South Africa will not last. It can't, because capitalism needs to exploit workers equally, regardless of their color. And sooner or later, South African capitalism is going to have to recognize that. And actually, he was right, it did. Not that it's done a lot of good to a lot of black South Africans, but nevertheless, at least you've no longer got apartheid there. And I do still think it's the case that capitalism isn't inherently racist, in the sense that it prefers one, inherently prefers one color, one even one gender of workers to another. But it does have a strong. The reason it has a strong seems to have a strong tendency in that direction. Very much kind of thing that Dan was just saying. It's inherently competitive, therefore divisive. That divisiveness works politically and ideology through nationalism, through demonization of the other in times of military and economic conflict. And this leads to scapegoating. So, and race is usually constructed, highly visible by colour. Therefore, it's an easy target for that kind of ideological expression. That's what I wanted to say.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to mention. That it's true, at all level, capitalism is sort of colourblind. I mean, in a sense that, of course, free marketers always argue that if you want to get rid of racism, you have full free market capitalism, because capitalists are only interested in profit. They want the best people to make the profit for them. So capitalism is inherently meritocratic, so the argument goes. So they don't care if you're black, brown, or what gender you are. If you're the best person to make the money for you, in an ideal capitalist world, they're the ones that get the best jobs. But I got to say again, what you mentioned before, I said the way that capitalism is organized on competition, especially competition between nation states, militates against that. As you say, we're all workers conditioned to feel belonging to a particular nation state and to see worker class people from outside it as you say, the other, as potential enemies, as different from themselves. So yeah, but you always have that structural, you know, that structural tendency towards the nationalism and racism, as it were.
Hello there. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, yes.
All right. Yeah. Cheers. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting talk and discussion so far. Yeah. I suppose my two penneth worth is that because the structural causes of racism and also, you know, other prejudices like, you know, gender or homophobia even, those divisions are built into capitalism and capitalism encourages those divisions, and it's hard to tackle that near enough impossible to tackle that in a structural way within capitalism through reformism. So and because of that difficulty in trying to not attacking the structural faults of capitalism, we've set out all these sort of symbolic responses, such as tearing down statues or removing old comedy shows from streaming services. So it's easy to make those sort of those sort of symbolic gestures. But of course, that highlights that any other change on a more fundamental level, you know, can't happen at the level that, the protesters want.
Yes, I agree. So two arguments. So on one level, you could simply argue that history has been made, that this shows, the tear down the symbol shows there's a greater sort of awareness about racism, but the very awareness by particularly young white people about the problems of black people, there's like a change, there's a change of wind of change, like it signifies that. But there's also a danger by going after the symbols that the government and the local authorities and other powers to be. They'll cynically try to substitute that for the substance of for example, now you've got councils now taking down statues of slave traders like in East London. Was it Tower Hamlets that took down the statues of slave traders? They may turn around, pretend that this is the aim of the Black Lives protest, is just to bring down the symbols of. And they may use that as a substitute for actually getting rid of the problems themselves. Just go back to 1966 when there used to be a statue of Nelson in Dublin and it was blown up. And it was the 50th anniversary of the 1960 uprising. IRA issued a statement denying any responsibility. They said, we're not interested in getting rid of the symbols of domination. We're interested in getting rid of the domination itself. In other words, that it's been implied that if you go after the symbols of domination, you might not get rid of domination itself, mate.
He's up again. Funny.
Oh, yeah, just a quick thing, really. this question about capitalism being, Howard said that capitalism is inherently racist. For perfectly good reasons, but we shouldn't run away with the idea that capitalism is just one thing. It's not one force going in one direction. It's multiple forces going in opposite directions. It's contradictory forces. So while Howard's right that there is an anti-racist tendency because of the money, Dan Mullins is also right that it also thrives on dividing workers any way it can. So, and for that reason, that's why I think racism won't disappear in capitalism. It's too useful to too many members of the ruling class. Yeah, that's me.
Sorry, Paddy, just to say, I didn't say capitalism was inherently racist. I said it isn't inherently racist.
Yeah, I thought that's what I said.
I think you said I said it was inherited.
Sorry, I meant the opposite.
any more questions, please? Ah, look good. Let's come back again. Hey, Mike, you got a further question? Go ahead, please.
I don't know too much about it myself, but isn't there a sort of like an autonomous zone in America that's come about through the Black Lives Matter protests? I've seen a few, sort of snippets about it on the news. I sort of haven't really kept up with what's been happening there. I just wonder if anyone sort of knew any more about it or, had any thoughts on that kind of thing. I mean, I suppose in a way it sort of reminds me of, the Occupy camps that were set up. I don't know if it's got a similar kind of aim to that, or perhaps it's a bit more ambitious. I don't know. So I can't remember what it's called. Was it CHAZ or something like that? Hope people know what I'm talking about. Thank you.
Heard about it. I don't know too much about it. It's in Seattle, isn't it? It's a bit like, I know it's like something like Paris Commune. No police are allowed in it, apparently. People in a little community part of Seattle organize themselves, own food distribution and everything, without no police have been allowed in. I don't know if I'm wrong, but I don't know if some of the armed police have took it over now. Is that correct? I'm not sure, really. The armed police moved in and ended it. Because Donald Trump's always threatening to sort of close it, take it over, close it down. I don't know if that's happened or not. Maybe somebody else has got some more info about it.
I'm going to jump the gun here. Both guys in Seattle and in Portland and probably in other places have been overrun, overpowered by the police. The what do you call it? The organized powers have overrun them. Finished.
I thought so. I thought maybe that happened. Yeah. Okay. Thanks. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Well, the one in Seattle closed down because they had 3 stabbings and a rape. That's what I read. So they voluntarily decided to dissolve it.
Well, that's a shame. I didn't realise that they'd all had a sad ending. Yeah, part of me is quite optimistic for that kind of endeavour. Setting up these areas. That's a shame if they've all turned out that way.
We've still got about another 10 minutes. Comments and questions.
Well, I'll cut in as I've asked a question. The mayor of Seattle. Basically, was a supporter of the CAV and CHAZ, whatever you want to call it, was browbeaten down because of the number of shootings and deaths, unfortunately shooting incidents. Now they may well have been false flags. I don't know, but It goes back to this thing that we talk about. Black Lives Matter has been totally infiltrated and subsumed by businesses and the influence peddlers and all the rest of it, within the establishment. It's like you can go from Greenpeace to God knows what. And the moment any resistance, if you like, to the status quo starts to have any traction, they're long before they do that, actually, they are infiltrated and are subsumed and used. Black Lives Matter is no different to Greenpeace or any other the protest movements. It's been used. It's sad, but people need to wake up to the fact that Black Lives Matter now is backed by so much money from the corporate entities. But how the fuck it have independent agenda? It cannot.
cut. You know, these people need to wake up. They need to reject the, you know, the fucking Republicans taking the knee, the Democrats taking the fucking knee, the corporations taking the fucking knee. For God's sake, wake up. These people don't give a shit about working people. They do not give a, they, you know, they don't, they do not care. They do not care. They will use, they will just simply use any organization, any movement that ordinary people create right against the system. They will use it and they will infiltrate it and they will use it and they will put the money into it and they will channel it. And Christ's sake, you know, yes, I'm fucking angry. I'm sitting here fucking angry because I can do nothing about it. You can sit and discuss this till the fucking cows come home. It matters not a jot, comrades. Matters not a jot.
Richard Bartlerill.
All right. Oh, hi. Yeah, I hope you can hear me. Not really a question, just a little contribution. But my memory is a bit vague on this. It's only a few weeks ago I read a review in The Guardian of a book by a guy whose name I won't forget. His name is Kevin Maxwell, but not that one, who was a police officer. And basically it's his memoirs of being a black man in the police force, and that he eventually quit having had years of harassment, bullying, discrimination, blah, blah. But he recounts a story where he was on the beat in at the time of the riots in Brixton in 1981. And he has, you know, there's very low ethnic minority members, very few of them in the British police force, and it hasn't changed much in 30-odd years. So there he is, trying to keep the peace in Brixton, and he hears someone say, kill the black one first, because, you know, and it struck, it sticked in his mind, of course, because he was seen as a traitor, you know, sort of a race traitor and a class traitor. That there he is in the police force. He's crossed the divide. He's joined up with the state, with the enemy, you know, and he's worse than the rest of them. He's worse than all the whites, because how could a black man do that? Yeah, I'll try. I should have Googled while I was waiting to find this guy's book. But there probably aren't any great surprises in there, really. Okay, that's all for me. Thanks.
It was sort of very interesting that what you said about the police officers. But I think that's probably 30 years ago when there was a lot of tension at the time in the early 80s. There's a lot of tension. Well, there is now, but I think the attitudes towards the term black police officers changed now. I may be wrong in this, but I think most black people do accept more police officers in the police at the moment. I may be wrong. That's the impression I get anyway. Just a small point.
Next in the queue was Carla.
I just want to say that I agree with every single word that Alan has, his impassioned contribution, every single word of it, that the corporations have taken over and they will take over everything to save their bacon. And I'm angry too, Alan. I'm fucking angry as well.
Any more comments, questions at all? Black Lives Matter. Brooklyn, do you flash in there? If you've got a question or comment, please put it in the speaking queue. Might be something wrong with your end. Your mic.
Richard is in there.
Richard Bottrell's there, yes.
already had him on.
It's come back again.
Oh.
I think it's come back again. Richard Botterill, yeah, it's come back again.
Yeah, I'm in the queue. Howard, I think, is it all right? Can I speak now?
Let's go on.
Yeah, I'll just say, carrying on from what Alan was saying about the way movements get sort of absorbed into capitalism wherever possible, I was just thinking of looking at the history of the ANC and how apartheid eventually ended in South Africa. And you see how at one time, if you go back to the 70s, the ANC was very closely connected with the Communist Party in South Africa. And it had a very left-wing program, a bit like Labour, the sort of thing that Tony Benn would be very fond of, or the sort of Euro-communists, where they were going to nationalise large parts of industry, and have all this sort of worker participation, they're going to control the exchange controls to keep the stop the money coming out of the country, etc., all this sort of thing. And they gradually moved away from that. They moved over in a way quite quickly, as the momentum built up, and there was a sort of sea change, once the Soviet Union collapsed and Eastern Europe, all that sort of politics went into decline or sort of retreated somewhat, and the ANC rebrands themselves and focuses purely on the issue of race. It purely becomes a matter of getting one person, one vote. You're just going to totally, all that matters is the race issue. And of course, they achieved that in the early 90s. But we look at South Africa now, and I don't know the exact figures, but I think we can generally say that the distribution of wealth is much the same as it was in the apartheid period. And the general social conditions have not really improved at all. You know, the pay and working conditions for most people are pretty rubbish, and housing, etc. There are a few black billionaires in South Africa. There are successful black businessmen, and of course, there's the politicians themselves, the later generation in the ANC, who've done really well. So that's typical of what we're, as socialists, always fighting against. That we have capitalism's just full of this very good at neutralizing things. Generally, it's the states, the politicians can latch onto it, and the business people as well. It's like, statistics, and the head of the office, head of ONS says, in no time at all has come out in support of Black Lives Matter. He's always going on about equal opportunities, about pride, LGBTQ plus, he's the first one, it seems, to get onto the right on groovy things to keep the staff happy. They're not going to actually do much about it. I mean, it's especially about this, the gender pay cap, and various issues of poor, discrimination within the organisation, but they just get lip service. They've got a policy. Don't worry, we're doing something about it, but they're not really. That's all. Thanks.